whatsoever beings exist throughout all galaxies. It doesn't make any difference. You are all of them. And when they come into being, that's you come into being. You know that very well.
Hello and welcome back to Aliens, UFOs, and Ghost Stories, a podcast dedicated to seekers. If you have a story that you'd like to share, the best way to get a hold of me is through email. My email is aliens, UFOs, and ghost stories at yahoo.com. And last but not least, if you guys have been enjoying our show, you could leave a small donation through our Patreon. There'll be links below in the show notes, and you can leave whatever you think the show's worth. Thanks, guys. Today, I am honored to be joined by Reverend Michael Carter. Reverend Carter, would you like to say hi?
Yes. Hello, everybody. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy day and schedules and to tune in. Much appreciated. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm absolutely honored you were able to come on today. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, yeah. What can I tell you? I'm a husband. I'm a father. I'm a minister. Lived in New York. I was an actor for about, almost 30 years, I guess. I lived in New York almost 30 years. I was in the theater for around 20. I am an author. I have a new book of sermons that just came out this month. And I'm excited about that. And most of the books I've written have been on UFOs and religion and spirituality. So that's where my passions lie. I'm very, very happy and excited to be part of the podcast tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we're thrilled to have you. And one of the reasons I reached out to you, Reverend Carter, is because I've recently been researching the connection between UFOs or aliens, whatever you choose to call them, ET, and religion. And I was first fascinated I suppose, through Chris Bledsoe's interpretation of his experience. Mm-hmm. How do you feel the two may be connected?
Well, I haven't read his book. I think they're connected because, when I go back to the work of the late, great Zachariah Sitchin and others, he kind of drew that connection for me when he talked about the mistranslations of the Old Testament, where the Elohim, plural, was interpreted singularly, and we wound up having one God instead of the story about these beings who were perceived to be gods. And I think that's how it got started. If we look at other cultures, for instance, if we look at the Upanishads, the Vedas, and the Hindu culture, they are very, very unashamedly talking about kings who are flying around in their Vimanas, their flying machines, and they're fighting each other, that kind of thing. The book of Genesis, of course, being based on the Mesopotamian Babylonian texts, the Epic of Gilgamesh, those types of things. And if you look at most of the stories, the narratives of other civilizations, whether it's the Cherokee, whether it's the Norsemen, the Vikings, whether it's Nigeria or other parts of Africa, they all have stories about beings coming down from the sky and helping some of them not so much, humanity, helping civilization, usually after some type of cataclysm. In this case, all these cultures I spoke about are talking about the Great Flood. So this is something that we know it happened because all of these cultures touch on it. They talk about it. And that's how I think the religion started. I'm not saying that our star people started them consciously or intentionally, but I think looking at the Bible, sacred texts to the Western world, of which we're a part, they were trying to describe in the language of their day the technology that they saw. And these beings were advanced technologically. And so to primitive Homo sapiens, they would be godlike.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. One of the a great example I've heard over and over is Ezekiel's wheel, and how they might just not, or they might not have had the vocab to describe it any other way. Do you think that that could have possibly been him describing a craft or a UFO?
Oh, there's no doubt that he was talking about a UFO. Ezekiel is describing in great detail what he saw. He tells us what this machine looked like. And, you know, of course, he's in ancient Iraq at the time. He tells us how it landed, what kind of wheels he had. The details are so precise that he gives us about the craft that NASA has a patent on the wheels. I don't know if you knew that. It was granted in 1974 to Joseph Blumrich. He was a NASA engineer at the time. He wrote a book called The Spaceships of Ezekiel. It's called The Omnidirectional Wheel. And you have to say, well, wait a minute. Why would God need a patent? So how can NASA have a patent on the Spirit of God? Because this is what Ezekiel was calling this, the Spirit of God. And the patent number is US378-9947A. The patent was obtained by NASA on February 5th, 1974. And it's used by NASA to this day. So, I mean, you can't get any more detailed than that.
Mm. Well, before we go too much further, I guess I was just so excited to get your perspective on that we almost kind of blew right through how your experiences started. Do you mind telling us that?
Back in 1989, I took a trip with my girlfriend at the time to Mexico. And we took a trip to the Yucatan Peninsula to see the pyramids, the Mayan pyramids. And so I didn't watch Star Trek. I did not believe in extraterrestrials. Because in my mind at the time, it wasn't in the Bible. Okay. So there's a sense of irony there. And when we got back to New York, because I was living in New York at the time, I had been invited to a party. I couldn't decide whether I wanted to go. I thought I'd be tired after coming back from 10 days in Mexico, but I wasn't. And so my girlfriend at the time said, I'm going to stay home and unpack. And I said, well, I'm going to go downtown. I caught the subway to Times Square to see my friend. No, we didn't have any alcoholic beverages, no adult beverages. I ate a lot. I love deviled eggs, and he had plenty of them. And, we talked, and I was nice and bronze and tanned, and my hair had changed colors. I had been out in the sun 6-8 hours a day. You know, it was beautiful. And so I kind of wanted to gloat. You know, it was freezing in New York, and I had just come back from 85, 87 degrees. So I go home that night, and in the middle of the night, I don't know to this day, I don't know whether I had to go to the bathroom or what, but I felt a presence in the room, and I sleep on my stomach. And when I turned over, there was a being, which we would today call a gray, at the foot of my bed, about 4 feet tall, tops, huge head. He wasn't gray. I'm using the pronoun he. I could have been a female. I don't know. But he was kind of a chalk white, very spindly, looked like his head could fall off his neck. He had on a jumpsuit looking garment. It looked like Reynolds wrap. It was shiny like Reynolds wrap. And my girlfriend at the time either couldn't, well, she didn't wake up. I was scared out of my wits. And around him was a blue light. And around that was this kind of white light, like my whole room was lit up. It was so bright. And I pulled the covers up over my head and got into the fetal position. That's how scared I was. And this was at the Excelsior Hotel. It's still there. I was just in New York 2 weeks ago. My girlfriend, well, she later became my first wife. She still lives there. And so we're talking on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. All that being said, I pulled the covers up over my head and I heard this whoosh, whoosh, like the wind was blowing, and I felt like I was outside. And at that time, we were living up on the 15th floor. And it was just a very strange sensation. I felt like I was outside of my room. And when I pulled the covers down, nobody was there, and I was back in my room. It was quiet. My girlfriend woke up. I told her what happened. She did not laugh at me. She's a very deeply spiritual woman. She did not laugh or, you know, say I was a nut or anything like that. And I told her what happened. And that's and that started the journey. I was getting visited twice a month on a full and new moon for about 8 months. Almost a year. And I would usually be paralyzed. And, you know, I saw several different races, but mostly these gray people. And they would show me pictures in my mind. We never talked, but they showed me pictures. And that started me on my journey. Now, at that time, Jacob, I was already drifting away from the religion of my youth. I was leaving Orthodox Christianity. I was raised Baptist. It really wasn't working for me anymore because I couldn't wrap my mind around a loving God saying, you're saved and you're not. Mm. And these people are going to burn in hell. And I said, that doesn't sound like love to me. And I kept trying to fit a round peg into a square hole. And it just didn't work. So that was part of my journey too. And these experiences kind of pushed me over and they made me reevaluate. What do you really believe? Not what you were told to believe, but what do you really believe? And of course I was in, you know, I went to seminary as well. So there was a lot going on in my life at that time.
Hmm. So earlier you said that when they came, they would paralyze you. Do you think that was for your safety or for theirs initially?
That's a great question. I never thought about it. But I mean, the obvious reason that came, you know, comes to me is that maybe for their safety. Because I've read stories and narratives where people have actually fought them, tried to hurt them. They were just so scared. So I would imagine it was for their safety, but also that, you know, when you have that type of terror or fear, you could easily wind up hurting yourself unintentionally. Mm. So I would say it was probably for all of us.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, just
it's a great question.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, you know, if we were to try to give medical attention to, say, a lion, you know, obviously we're going to tranquilize it. So it can't hurt us or itself. But so I also remember hearing in a previous interview that you had stuff early on, but you didn't realize at a young age that there could have been anything connected to it, say, like, you know, blood on a pillow or even orbs.
Oh, yeah, boy, you've really done your homework. I love it. Yeah, when I was younger, Jacob, I would see these orbs in my room. First of all, I could see auras, always. I would see the colors around people, around objects, but I thought everybody did. So I really couldn't articulate it. But to me, I thought it was just what everybody did. But I do remember these orbs in my room. Now I look at them. They could have been orbs. They could have been beings that didn't need bodies. And they were different colors. Blue. They were like the colors of what we would look at as the chakras. Mm. And But I did notice that occasionally I would wake up in the morning and there would be blood on my pillow. And I didn't know. I thought my ears were bleeding or what have you. Now, there's some literature that suggests that sometimes people get nosebleeds or they have these tracking devices put in them, in their nose or wherever. But I could never to this day pinpoint, where is this blood coming from? So that may have had something to do with my visits, looking back.
So earlier you mentioned that you've had interactions with grays, but I've heard you mention numerous different ET yes. that you've interacted with.
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, if we did have the video on, I could show you. I have an artist friend in Nevada who is an experiencer as well, but she's an artist. And when I would see one of these beings, I would describe them and she would make a sculpture for me. But I've seen the beings that I have seen. I've seen a reptilian twice. I've seen the grays several times. I had a healing from a Nordic being back in January. I'm sorry, back in July of 2013. I've seen a praying mantis. And I've seen a blue being, which I thought was an Arcturian, but can't say for sure, but the skin was blue. Those are the different races that I have had contact with.
And did they all seem benevolent?
Yeah.
I mean,
nothing untoward happened to me. I wasn't hurt. I was hurt once by the grays, but I think it was a mistake. I'm pretty sure it was a mistake. So I can't say that they meant me any harm. Now, I've also been visited by entities, which some of them I didn't feel were too friendly, but again, nothing happened to me.
And earlier you mentioned being healed. And for those of you yes. who don't know, yeah, a friend of ours actually, Preston Dennett actually wrote a book on this phenomenon. And
I'm in his second book.
That's right. And do you mind sharing what exactly happened there?
Well, there's a little backstory, so I'll give you that. But this happened July 4th of 2013. The backstory is I was going through a hard time in my life. I was getting fired from a job. My dad had passed away in January of 2013, and I was getting divorced. It sounds like a country western, sounds like a blues story. And I had a lot of friends who fought in Vietnam, and I didn't serve. I was too young, and when I got out of high school in 75, the war was over. So, and they would tell me stories. Some of them clearly damaged individuals. Some of them wouldn't talk about it at all. Some of them couldn't stop talking about it. And they would tell me, two of them were Green Berets. One was a tunnel rat, and the other one was at a place called Hamburger Hill, which is a famous battle. And they would tell me what they had to go through, you know, sleeping in a foxhole at night. When it rained, there'd be water in the foxhole. It would be cold sometimes at night. They would tell me that you would learn to catch a couple hours sleep, even if there was artillery going out and coming in. And on July 4th, 2013, it was raining here and there were fireworks here, but they canceled them because of the rain. I was very happy. I don't like fireworks. My ex-wife did, and my daughter did, and we would go every year, and it would be mosquito bites, and you had to find a place to park, and, you know, they didn't start till 9:30. You had to find a place around 7:30. So 2 hours go by. The fireworks last for 30 minutes from 9:30 to 10, mm-hmm. and it was over. And I'm like, why am I doing this? But I wanted to be a good father. Mm-hmm. So the night that they canceled it, it was severe thunderstorms here where I live in North Carolina. But I was so happy that they canceled it. So about what time? It was 10 o'clock Preston's time, because I called him after it happened and couldn't get in touch. Let's say about 7, because 3 hour difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah, about 6:45, 7. Anyway, I lying on my stomach, I was not asleep, and I felt a presence in the room. Now, the last detail is I had a blood clot. I'd never had a blood clot before. I didn't even know what they were like. I thought I had pulled a muscle in my leg. My ex told me, she said, you didn't listen when we were married, but you've had this pain for 3 or 4 days. You really need to go check this out. I did. My doctor said, did you drive here? I said, yeah. He said, can you drive? I said, yeah. He told me to get an MRI immediately. He said I had a blood clot in my right foot, my right leg, from my ankle all the way up to the groin area. And if it had burst, it would have killed me. Mm. So that's the backstory there. So between that and, you know, my dad dying and the whole bit. So I felt a presence in the room. When I turned around, there was a blonde, blue-eyed guy with a hoodie on. Not a hoodie, a cowl that they like, you know, like the monks wore back in the medieval time. He had like a page boy haircut. He was very, 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 very pale. And he had blue eyes. He was really, really, really built. You could see the muscles through the robe. Mm. He had a rope for a belt. And he was as tall as my ceiling, which was easily 8-9 feet tall. Mm. And I thought my heart was going to come out of my chest. He stuck his hand out, and an apple green light came out of his hands. And it hit me, because at this time I was sitting up. I was so in shock. And I saw the light hit me in my stomach, but I didn't feel it. And he just dissolved. His molecules of his body just separated, and he wasn't there anymore. I looked at my leg, and the swelling was completely gone. Mm. It was gone. I called Preston. It was about 9:45. His time. I mean, my time. But it was about 7 o'clock his time. And I figured he was just out. You know, he was at that time, he was, now he lives on the East Coast, but at that time he was living in California. And so I didn't have the presence of mind to take a picture of my leg. But when I showed it to my ex-wife and my daughter, they both gasped at the same time. They were like, they healed your leg. Mm-hmm. When I got to the, I was getting, they were taking my blood, you know, pricking my finger every week, every 10 days, I guess, to see if the blood was thinning. And I had to go and talk to the doctors. Of course, I didn't tell the doctor what had happened, but they were very curious as to how all of a sudden my leg was a normal size again. I mean, my leg was huge. Mm. I'm pretty thin. And my legs are very thin, but at the time of the blood clot, it looked like one of my legs looked like LeBron James's. Like, I wish I had legs that muscular. And they kept pressing me. It felt like an interrogation. And again, I wasn't going to tell them what happened. They would have committed me, locked me up, I thought. So finally, I said to them, "Look, I don't know what happened. You don't know what happened. Aren't you happy for me?" Can't we be happy? You know, you're people of science. I get science, but I can't explain it, and neither can you. And so they backed off. And they took me off of the medication I was on. It was Coumadin. They call it Wayfarin or whatever they call it now. And that was it. So I had a healing from this blonde, blue-eyed extraterrestrial.
That's incredible. Yeah, I can only imagine how confused or just baffled, really, that the doctors were. I heard you in the previous interview mention that you did have a past life regression. Do you care if we talk about that?
Yeah. Well, I've had past life. I've had a past life regression twice. But the Grays people showed me a past life. They showed me a time when I was a monk. I was a Catholic monk. I had that kind of haircut where like an egg. And then I had, you know, the hair around it, you know, bald spot at the top. I had that robe with the rope belt. Kind of like a Francis of Assisi type look. And then they showed me, they were right next to each other. There was a picture of me speaking at a, I was speaking in a church in modern time, which happened. So it was kind of like a future thing. And so that explains a lot to me. Well, ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be a priest, a minister. It explained a lot because I've always loved religion, not for what it is, but for what it can be or used to be. And I'm at home in any house of worship, whether it's a mosque, whether it's a cathedral, you know, whether it's just a church up on the corner, a little country church. I feel comfortable. And by them showing me that lifetime, it explains it because I've done this before.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I wonder if, you know, part of the reason that, say, like ancient aliens reached out to you, other than your books, of course, possibly could have been because you're one of, you know, very few religious leaders who kind of spoke about the subject. You know, they're not mutually exclusive, religion and, you know, ufology. Do you think that's part of the reason that they started kind of reaching out to you?
Yes. Well, I know it was with the book. And yes, you know, I'm one of very few. My friend and colleague, Dr. Barry Downing, he was on the show once. As a matter of fact, after I finished my segment, we had shot in New York that day. Usually we shoot in L.A. And I looked at the schedule and I said, oh, my God, my friend's coming. And he's a retired Presbyterian minister. But and we're both Protestant, you know. It's just not a lot of clergy talking about it. And I understand why. I think I do, because I you know, you can lose your job. You can lose your congregation because of the constraints that are put on you. I mean, I'm a Unitarian Universalist. We're pretty liberal and pretty open. Now they don't talk about UFOs. As a matter of fact, I was told, when I told a colleague of mine when I first started out, they said, Michael, I believe that you believe what you say is true. She said, but if you ever want to have a career in this denomination, you must never tell that story again. And I did have a woman who tried to get me fired from the congregation I'm in now. That was many, many years ago. But she went to the board. She said she was up one night and she was flipping channels. And she said, I saw my minister on a TV show talking about little green men. I'm uncomfortable with that. And she was a big donor of the church. And she came to the board and she presented her case to the board. She wanted me disciplined and or fired. And they wouldn't do it, which I'm very grateful.
Yeah, thank God. So, yeah, now that we're back to religion, do you think, other than Ezekiel, of course, do you think that there's any other scripture that, you know, would make you believe that what they were seeing during these times may not have simply just been angels?
Well, I'm interpreting angels as extraterrestrials. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the birth of Jesus, if you look at the birth of John the Baptist, if you look at the birth of Samson, obviously Elijah being taken up into heaven on a flying chariot, I mm-hmm. interpret all of those stories as contact encounters. The flying chariot to me is their way of saying this was a flying ship, this was a machine. Mm-hmm. But again, they're using the language of their day. If I'm looking at the extraterrestrial, well, the angels that visit Abraham and Sarah, you know, angel just means messenger. And the thing about an angel, they don't tell you where they look like, what they look like, or where they come from. But they're certainly not human. I believe our ancestors put wings on these beings to let us know that they flew. That was their way of telling us that. So if you read the Bible and anywhere you see angel, I believe if you put the word star person or extraterrestrial, it makes a lot more sense.
Mm. Yeah. And in the case with you, you know, sometimes they're healing us and, you know, angels, you might make the argument that they would try to heal others as well. Yeah, that's really fascinating. And then this might be a little bit out there for some listeners, but I've heard people speculate that Jesus himself could have been hybridized. How do you feel about that?
I believe that he was. I mean, if your mother is human mm-hmm. and your daddy is not, that means you're not fully human. Mm-hmm. And so it sure would make a lot of sense around, you know, the healings that he did, the so-called miracles that he did. You know, he would be worshipped as a god, which a lot of people still do today. You know, I think that he says, you know, in the Gospel of John, my kingdom is not of this world. I believe he meant that. And when you look at the teachings of loving your enemies, of doing a right to those who use you, not to be a fool, but to have this overwhelming love, this commitment to serving, that's not an earthly religion. That's not an earthly perspective on life, because we're about revenge. We're about an eye for an eye. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And he's coming along with a whole different paradigm, very different from the Old Testament, very different from Yahweh. And so I would say that this man was from another planet, another dimension, another world, if you will.
Mm. Yeah, I've often thought about that because, I mean, so, you know, Jesus was known for spreading the word of love. And, you know, for us to stop warring with each other or just conflict in general. And I've done a lot of these interviews and a lot of experiencers or abductees. They'll often, you know, describe them as, you know, very, very loving beings. And sometimes they'll even ask, like, what am I supposed to even be doing here? And they'll say to love. You're supposed to experience love. How do you feel about that?
I feel that a lot of these beings are benevolent, and I mm-hmm. feel that some of them may not be so much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I used to not want to talk about beings that weren't loving because that wasn't my experience. I believe that the beings who came to visit me changed my life for the better. Of course, I had to do some work. But there are beings, and they're in the Bible. They're in our myths and legends, and they're in the Eastern pantheon of gods. Some of them were just very warlike. And some of them, you know, they got drunk, they made love, they got angry, they fought each other. So it's a very layered kind of story. There are some people who say, oh, come on, they're all here to because they all care. And I don't know if that's true. I don't, from my studies, it doesn't seem to be true, but there are beings who do want to see us evolve, want to see us change our consciousness. And there's some who just want to be here because of the resources that our planet has. So, you know, it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And just a few more questions on the religious aspect. There's a theory for a long time. This theory has been pretty prevalent that they could possibly have seeded us. How do you feel about that? Or what's your interpretation of that?
Well, if you go back and read the Mesopotamian narratives, if you look at Genesis, you know, there we have right there the Elohim, which was mistranslated as God, says, "Let us make man in our image." So that means they created us. They seeded us. It's right there. If you look at the Epic of Gilgamesh, if you look at the Mayan Popol Vuh and Mesoamerican culture, if you look at the Upanishads, clearly we're being told that we were created to serve the gods initially. And because they wanted us to work for them. Mm-hmm. And they created Homo sapiens. Not right away. I mean, they did a lot of experiments too. Zachariah Sitchin's work covers that if your listeners are interested, or they can go read the Epic of Gilgamesh or, you know, anything by, you know, in the Upanishads or the Vedas, the Mahabharata, talk about these gods and their flying machine and that we were created by them.
Yeah, I've heard that before, that perhaps they created us in a sense to help, you know, mine gold or whatnot.
Yes.
Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm referring to. We were supposed to be a race to help make their lives easier. And if you read the Bible, when these wars are going on, who is caught in the middle? The Elohim have armies that are human armies. And so they're fighting each other. And they're fighting each other on the behest of these gods. Yahweh is going into Canaan. And who is he fighting? He's fighting other human beings and other gods, other extraterrestrials, I would say. And he's leading them. And so we see that. You see it again in the Hindu scriptures. And it's pretty prevalent.
Yeah, earlier you were talking about a line in scripture that said, "Let us make them in our image." And that always was fascinating to me, because my interpretation was it was, you know, just God himself, like a singular person. I might have that wrong. But if that was the case, then why would he phrase it that way? In our image, like who's our, like who are the other people?
Exactly. Yeah. Now, some people will say, well, it's the Trinity. It's a hard argument to make, but the correct translation is the Elohim, not God. The Elohim said, "Let us make man in our image." Elohim is a plural verb, masculine usually.
Okay.
And it just makes more sense. The other thing is too, when you read the Bible, family Bibles are different than scholarly Bibles. And usually in the family Bibles, those stories are mistranslated. But for the scholar, and I'm not saying I'm a scholar, but I did go to seminary, you have... that's why certain Bibles are better to read. Like the worst Bible you can read is the King James. Why? I mean, the prose is beautiful, but it makes all the people sound like they're Shakespearean actors because it was obviously transformed and transmitted in King James's time. But like if you get an interlinear Bible, a Hebrew, Greek, English study Bible, the New Jerusalem study Bible is a Bible I like. Why? because they are very transparent. Like if you look at the footnotes, they will tell you, we really don't know what this word means, or this word is usually translated this way. If you can get a good translation, you can see where some of these stories are. But you also have to say this, Yahweh is killing people. Yahweh has anger management problems. It's very hard to say that this is the God of the universe. This is the loving God, certainly not the God that Jesus is talking about. Yahweh has temper tantrums. He kills people. He commits genocide. How can you worship a being like that?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And then just to circle back, when you were talking about different Bibles that you like or prefer, I've heard that a lot of them don't make any mention of the Book of Enoch. Is that right?
Well, that's because it was not put in the canon. It's true. And if you read the Book of Enoch, it is a continuation of Genesis 6. Whoever wrote Genesis 6, they give you a brief overview. It's almost as if they think that you already know the story. But Enoch goes into greater detail about the 200 angels who came, the fallen angels, the so-called fallen angels. And, you know, they took wives among the human beings and created a hybrid race.
Now, when you say the fallen angels, I've heard some people call them the Nephilim. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah. Some people call them the Nephilim. Some people call them the Elohim. Some people call them the Anunnaki. I think they're all referring to the same race of beings.
Yeah, and I could be wrong, but I thought in some biblical scripture that they said that they were mating with like regular Homo sapiens sapiens. Is that right, or do I have that wrong? Like they would take on like human wives or partners?
They were, yeah. They did. That's what I was saying. They took human. Mm-hmm. They took wives. They married, or they took wives, and they made offspring, and the offspring were giants. Mm-hmm. They were half human and half Elohim or Anunnaki. And some of them had 5-6 fingers. They were very, very tall. In some instances, if you read the Book of Jubilees, which was never in the canon, there's a lot of sexual transgressions going on with some of these beings. So, what's intriguing about those stories, at least to my mind, is that our genomes, our phenotypes are so similar that we can actually mate with one another, which means we have their same DNA in us as well.
That's fascinating. And this, I'll ask you briefly about this. It's kind of an obscure word that I just learned about 2 years ago, but I know that you know a lot more about religion than, an average guest who might come on. Have you ever heard of the Edomites?
Yes. I think they're, they're, if you Google them, yeah, they're in the Bible, the Edomites.
Oh, Edomites, yes. Excuse me. Yeah, the only reason I ask, I'll say it briefly because these guys already know the story, but one of the first times I started telepathically trying to communicate with, at the time, I just thought it was like, maybe like spirit guides. I'm not sure who it was, but the only telepathic thought voice I've ever got my whole life was when I was in a really low spot in my life. And I just said, I was going over things telepathically, like, why am I here? Who am I? And then when I got to who am I heard Adome, A-D-O-M-E, which is a singular form of the Edomites. And it's pretty fascinating. To my understanding, it's a group of people who were kicked out of Jerusalem for worshiping a false god, if I have that right.
The Edomites right. were the enemies of the Israelites. They were the descendants of Esau, who often battled the Jewish nation. So there's probably a Palestinian lineage there. But I'm not sure. But if they were fighting the Israelites, they established a kingdom called Edom in where modern day Jordan is right now. And they were, the false god thing is you have to, that may not necessarily be true. It was a false god. There were beings when Yahweh, if you go to Deuteronomy 32, you see that Yahweh was given the Elohim were given certain parts of the earth. It's in Deuteronomy 32. The commander, who they call Lord, when it should be Elohim, gave Yahweh the Palestinian people, Israelites then. But he didn't give them any land. And that's why Yahweh and these and those his believers, they were fighting for land. So that's why they went into the land of Canaan. You know, this is the land I'll show you. You know, they're fighting for land. The thing is, though, is that if you didn't worship Yahweh, then anybody else was a false god. So false god is just the definition that this is our god, and if you're not worshiping this god, then you're worshiping false gods. Do you see where I'm going?
Mm-hmm. Yahweh, I understand. Okay.
Yeah, Yahweh is not God. Yahweh is not the creator or this energy. No, Yahweh's not that person. Or as they say now, he's not that guy. Mm. Yahweh is a member of the Elohim. He is a warrior god. He is an extraterrestrial. He is ruthless. He wants complete obedience from his followers. You don't have any other gods before me. Well, if you're supreme God, why would you even worry about it? You have to be circumcised. You don't, he's overly obsessed with his people. He's overly obsessed with intermarriage. You're not supposed to marry the Gentiles. This is not a god. This is another being. And the reason the reason he's telling people not to worship other gods is because not only do you not worship them, you don't create an image of them. I am the supreme God. He sounds very insecure.
Well, I appreciate that breakdown. I've studied it a little bit on my own, and I've only gotten so far, so I really do appreciate that knowledge. I know I'm kind of all over the place, but earlier we were talking about Cherokee Indians, and of course they referred to the ET as star brothers and sisters. Do you feel that certain ethnicities, nationalities have, I'm not sure how to phrase that, are just more susceptible to contact? I've even heard Irish. More than
no,
most
I
others?
I don't think that at all. I don't think that at all. I do think that people who were very close to nature, because nature is one of the greatest teachers we have here, and we see what happens when we go against nature. We tear up our environment. We change the seasons, we do all. Human beings are the only beings who, rather than adapt to their surroundings, we try to force our surroundings to adapt to us. And so we have the problems that we have now. I think that, well, I'll put it like this. I don't think if you go back in Celtic lore, if you go back to Aboriginal lore, where it's Aboriginal people in Australia or the Native American folks here, the Vikings, they live close to the land. They lived off the land, if you will. This was not a big deal for them to be in contact with other beings, to be in contact with nature spirits, to be in contact with just other types of beings. In the age of enlightenment and reason, we got so educated, and I say we, even though I'm a man of color this lifetime, but I'm educated in the West, that all that stuff had to be, that had to be repressed. That was superstition. It wasn't scientific. And so all of that had to be ridiculed and made fun of, and that had to be gotten out of the way because it didn't fit into the worldview. So it never really went out of the way. People just practiced it underground. Mm. You see, people just kept their indigenous beliefs, and maybe they mixed it in with Catholicism. Maybe they mixed it in with Protestant Christianity, where they would have what the society said was normal, but when no one was looking, or when they were by themselves, or when they were with loved ones, they used their indigenous religion. And sometimes they mixed the two.
Okay, well, that would make sense.
Yes.
And then we're coming up on about, I think we've got roughly 10 minutes. I'll just try to get to the point on a couple of these. I was curious to see how your contact has evolved, say, within the last decade or so. Has it changed in any way or slowed down at all?
No. It's changed. How it's changed is once you, me, anybody, once you start believing that you live in a populated universe, that you're not the only person, the only species, the only race, it forces you to, if you're open, to question what God is. Whatever idea you had about God or a God, it changes. When you realize that you live in a populated universe. How my life and my beliefs have changed is just, I've gone deeper. The things I'm talking to you about the gods who came here and how they helped civilization and in some ways hindered, that's new. I've been going deeper into it. Before, I just happened to be a minister who believes in extraterrestrials, who has seen extraterrestrials, interacted with extraterrestrials. Now, I'm going deeper by saying, okay, how has that affected humankind? Not just me, but how has that affected humankind? If these beings came here and taught us about civilization, about astronomy, astrology, about, you know, making beer, having civilization, money, those types of things. What were the pros and what are the cons of that? And that's where I am now. It's like I've gone I've gone down the rabbit hole a little deeper.
Yes, that's the funny thing about this subject is the more you learn, the more you don't know, it seems, you know?
Exactly. And Plato, or was it Socrates, said that I'm wise because I know that I don't know.
Mm.
So it keeps you humble.
Absolutely. There's just a few more questions I had on here. Do you have any memory on craft?
I do not. When I was hypnotized by the late Bud Hopkins and by the late Gene Mundy, in those tapes, I was on a craft, but as consciously remembering they took me on a craft, no. I would never have known that until I was regressed.
Hmm. Yeah, that's fascinating that they, sometimes they seem to let somebody have full, what's the word I'm looking for? They don't have anything missing really from their memory. And with others, they seem to take memories here and there. I would assume to not make them upset. Sorry, I have a dry throat.
That's okay. And sometimes you, because of the fear, or sometimes no fear, but sometimes your mind just blocks it out as well, because it just changes your whole reality.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so I was curious to see how do you feel about this slow leak of disclosure that they seem to be doing right now?
It's not ideal, but I'll take it. I used to get angry about it, but I don't anymore. I can kind of understand it, even though I may not agree with it. We are in disclosure, and I'm glad you framed it that way. You know, we don't know who's at the table. We don't know what treaties have been signed with other beings. So we think that decisions are made on one level, but we may find out that there are decisions being made at other levels. And there are also some extraterrestrials who don't want disclosure right now because we're not ready yet. So it's like I say, it's not ideal. It's going to come out sooner or later, and it's coming out now. It's controlled. I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one step forward is better than standing still, I suppose.
Yes.
And then this has been a question I've been asking all my guests. We didn't get to speak much about this before, but I have this really intense connection with owls, and I've noticed that a lot of experiencers do. Do you have anything odd with owls at all? Maybe hearing them or seeing?
I don't, but I know people who do. I saw an owl last year. I drove by it. He was huge, and I was going to the gym. It was about 5:30. No, was it? Was I going to the gym? Yeah, maybe I was. I was going somewhere early in the morning. Gorgeous, and you know, owls to me have always been a symbol of wisdom. For me, that's what they symbolize. However, there is literature that suggests that sometimes these beings, especially grays, they can present themselves as owls. Mm-hmm. There's some people who think seeing an owl is bad luck. Who knows if they're connected? I have my ex-wife's nephew cannot even be in a room with a picture of an owl.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know why. We don't know if anything ever happened. He just says, I'm afraid of owls. I don't know if he's an experiencer and just doesn't know it. But it's interesting lore between experiencers and owls.
Yeah, there sure is. A lot of people would call that like a screen image. And a lot of experiencers or abductees, contactees, at some point in their life, they have what they think is a screen image. For some, it's I've heard anything from deer, wolves, clowns.
Yes,
even. Like,
yes.
Do you feel like you've had any sort of screen image type memories or reoccurring things that you might have seen?
No, because they I would think that they have no reason to screen anything now. I mean. They've shown themselves to me, maybe as a kid, but I don't remember that. But the beings that I told you that I have seen, and they were in my bedroom. They touched me, so I wouldn't need a screen memory for that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
we'll end on this, and then I would like to talk a lot about your books. So, if you could sum up the ancient astronaut theory, I'll be perfectly honest, I don't know a whole lot about it, but what's your interpretation of it? And I guess, how do you feel about it?
Well, I'm a proponent of it. I feel very positive about it. For me, the ancient astronaut theory is that that's been paleo contact, which is the study of extraterrestrial life on this planet, that human beings, humankind has been visited and seeded by extraterrestrials, and that these beings have assisted us along the way in our evolution as a species. I think that's pretty much ancient astronaut theory.
Okay. All right. And so your newest book, it's Initiation, the Spiritual Transformation of the Experiencer, a Guide for Contact Experiencers. If you guys go on Amazon, you'll see it's getting outstanding reviews. Can you tell us about your other books and where we can find them?
Sure. Actually, that's my next newest book. I just wrote a book of sermons that just came out on December 3rd. As a matter of fact, it's a hardcover. The Kindle will come out this Saturday. It's called Enlightenment, and it's a collection of sermons that I put together. My book, Alien Scriptures, was my first book I had written. The second book I wrote was A New World, If You Can Take It, which is almost like a continuation. And then the third book I had written was a meditation manual called God Consciousness. And then I wrote a book on healing and prayer called The Metaphysics of Spiritual Healing and the Power of Affirmative Prayer. And then came Initiation, which is a handbook for experiencers, or for, like, if you have a family member who's an experiencer or you think is an experiencer. And then finally, Enlightenment just came out on December 3rd. All of those books can be purchased on Amazon or Barnes & Nobles. My email is michaeljscarter@gmail.com. I have a Facebook fan page, which is Reverend Michael J. Carter. I also have a regular page called Michael J.S. Carter. And if you write me, I will respond. And I thank you and your listeners for having me on and taking the time to talk about this topic.
Absolutely, Reverend Carter. I really do appreciate your time. And anytime I can have a conversation with somebody and learn, I'm very, very grateful for that. But I do appreciate your time. I'll let you go. And be sure that next time you see Mary and Deb Cobble, tell them I said hi.
I certainly will. And let me know when you have a link for this. I'd like to send it to some friends of mine. And you ask excellent questions, very professional. You know, if you ever want to do another interview, let me know.
Oh, I'd be honored. And I'll get that link over no later than Monday.
Okay. Listen, have a wonderful holiday. Wishing whatever you celebrate, wishing you a merry everything and a happy always.
Same to you. I appreciate your time, Michael. You have a good night. If you guys enjoyed this episode, the best way to help is to leave our podcast a review or hit the subscribe button. I really appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Today's outro is Calling All Hybrids by Skits the PLK. If you like his stuff, go to schizomusic.com.
I'ma do this for my hybrids, yeah. From a different world, looking to provide us with knowledge, wishing that we all just stop the violence. They try to show us how to build, but we always demolish, yeah. Listen, I'm here to reach out to you. You can ask me anything, I'll never lie to you. If you came in from above, then I'ma ride for you. If you're only spreading love, then I would die for you, huh. That's crazy, right? You can call it what you want, but through the weeds we getting blunt. It isn't time to play around and go to lunch, when the ops can destroy the whole planet in a month. I'm the kind of contactee that'll contact any kind being with a compact beam. Yeah. Just to see the starship gleam in the middle of the night with my team. If you feel without me, then you might be a hybrid. Bare minimum a contactee. If you know you a hybrid, feel free to come and contact me. Baby, I'm a star seed. Here to give you the support that y'all seek. If you know you a hybrid, give me the knowledge that humanity needs. You might be a hybrid. Bare minimum a contactee. If you know you a hybrid, feel free to come and contact me. Baby, I'm a star seed. Here to give you the support that y'all seek. If you know you a hybrid, give me the knowledge that humanity needs. Try to take a minute to understand where you're finna. When you're living for the love of it, you get love in your spirit. I guess it's only human to sit and stew in your feelings. So I think we need a hybrid to come and show us the healing. Techniques used by the ancient ones through vibration. We can meditate for fun. Who would have thought a couple breaths could replace a gun? Let's get mindful. Let the grace overrun the streets till it reaches every mind that shines like me. I'm living for it, but I swear that I'm dying to see the hybrids coming forth with honesty. To let us know we're not alone in this odyssey. Tell the deep state that I need an apology. For suppressing technology and using taxes as an excuse for robbing me. If it bothers you just like it bothers me, then you might be a hybrid. Bare minimum a contactee. If you know you a hybrid, feel free to come and contact me. Baby, I'm a star seed. I'm here to give you the support that y'all seek. If you know you a hybrid, give me the knowledge that humanity needs. Contact me.
attack me. Yeah. Baby, I'm a star seed. Yeah. Here to give you the support that y'all seek. If you know you a hybrid, give me the knowledge that humanity needs. Yeah. You might be a hybrid. Bare minimum, a contact me. If you know you a hybrid, feel free to come and contact me. Yeah. Baby, I'm a star seed. Yeah. Here to give you the support that y'all seek. Yeah. If you know you a hybrid, give me the knowledge that humanity needs. Peace and love, love and light.